got you interested in mathematics, and how early did that happen?
I grew up in a very mathematical household. Both my parents were math teachers. My my father was a math professor at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point, and my mom taught as an adjunct there for many years. So they both taught college mathematics. And interestingly, I have two brothers, but the math sort of thing didn't take for the two of them. I was the one who got the put on the math track, and I really loved it. I remember from very early on I was learning and understanding and really interested in a lot of mathematics.
Was it something that particularly caught your attention, or was it a more general interest in mathematical things?
I was always interested in games and puzzles and things like that, and then when it came to school mathematics, I was always interested to see how things fit together and to see that things sort of, you know, just worked. That quality of mathematics that we all love, that somehow things fit together in amazing ways that are really unexpected and they just work. I remember very vividly my mom teaching me the Pythagorean theorem in what must have been fifth grade or so. And I remember just wanting to go out and apply the Pythagorean theorem wherever I could. Just finding right triangles so I could apply the Pythagorean theorem.
Now, did your schooling reinforce your interest in mathematics?
It did. I had wonderful teachers who were willing to give me problems that were, a stretch for the rest of the class. They wanted to feed my curiosity in math and to keep me going. And they were very good about letting me be, in the next class. I think starting in first grade, I was working with second graders and doing their math. But my teachers were wonderful. They were always looking for extra challenges for me to keep me interested.
Did you get involved at all with math competitions?
I did. And in middle school, my teacher came and said there was this math competition called Math Counts. And so I was on the team. And back then, it was 7th and 8th grade. And so I was on the team both years, and then in my 8th grade year, I ended up winning the state of Wisconsin and going to nationals. That was one of the first times I came here to Washington, D.C. as a Math Counts participant.
Mm-hmm. Now, at the same time, there are indications you had an interest in music.
Mm-hmm. My mom started me playing violin when I was 4.
Oh.
And the reason I got violin is because my older brother chose piano.
Oh.
And so those were the two instruments that were available in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. So he got piano and I got violin. And I enjoyed playing violin when I was young, but it was definitely a struggle. My mom had to get me to practice. And until middle school or so, that was when I really started to just love playing.
Mm-hmm. Now in high school, were you already thinking about careers and which way direction you would be going in?
I was exploring things. When I was in high school, I went to Interlochen Music Academy for the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the big places to go for high school kids. And that's 8 weeks of very intensive music training. And I loved it. I had a wonderful time. We played great music. I also found out that there are people out there who are thrilled to practice their violins for 7 hours a day. And I was not one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Around that time, so that I was maybe 16, and I decided I wasn't going to do the music for a living. I also, when I would meet mathematicians and musicians sort of later in their
mm-hmm.
careers, the mathematicians were always happier.
Mm-hmm.
The musicians were always a little bit jaded, and what had clearly at one point been a passion for them, their music, had become sort of a little bit dreary. It was their job. And mathematicians never seemed to have that.
So when you went to college, was mathematics the obvious choice, or were there other possibilities?
I did a lot of college classes when I was in high school still.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the time I got to college, I was already halfway to a math major. So
mm-hmm.
I sort of always knew I was going to get the math major just because it was... I was taking more classes, and that would get me pretty much there. But at various times when I was an undergraduate, I had declared majors in, I think, music, philosophy, German, and physics.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, I thought I was going to get a math and a physics degree, and I was told a week before graduation that I was one credit short of my physics degree.
Oh.
And so I had to drop that.
Now, where did you go to school?
The University of Wisconsin-Madison.
Was that an automatic choice, or was there an attraction?
No. I applied to a bunch of different places. One big attraction is, at that time, Wisconsin was giving free tuition to all the valedictorians in state.
Oh.
So, free tuition at the state school, versus a pricey public or a pricey private school that I might go to. That made it a little bit easier to choose to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's these big state schools, I think they get a bit of a bad rap. But if you're a bright student at a big state school, you get a lot of resources.
You have a lot of choices.
A lot of choices. You get to know your professors if you are really intentional about it.
Mm-hmm. Were there people who sort of influenced you, given which way you went and what directions you took in your career?
Yeah, I had wonderful professors at Wisconsin, many of whom really took an interest in me. And it was my senior year during my undergrad that the two of them, Michael Bleacher and Melinda Certain, were... they talked to me about this program that we're starting. It was an emerging scholars program at Wisconsin, especially to retain underrepresented students. And that was something that was really interested me a lot. So the first year of their program, they were running the sections, sort of like TAs, and I was the undergraduate assistant as a graduating senior.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a wonderful time in that program. So when I applied to graduate school there, one of the things they offered me was my own emerging scholars class. And that was very hard to turn down.
Uh-huh.
So I stayed at Wisconsin and got my master's and then my PhD. But there were a lot of professors there who were very attentive to students.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of that came from, Walter Rudin and Mary Ellen were both absolutely
mm-hmm.
fantastic with students. Walter was, they were both long since retired by the time I was there, but they were in the department all the time. When there's a reception for the new graduate students, Mary Ellen was always
mm-hmm.
always there, walking up to each new graduate student, introducing herself. They were really fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really think they set a tone for that department that made it a friendly place.
Mm-hmm. As you went through your graduate work, the next step is a job somewhere. Or a postdoc, perhaps, in between. You also seem to have an interest on the teaching or the education side rather than just a purely research focus, too.
Mm-hmm. So I think I knew somewhere toward the end of graduate school that I was interested in my research, but it wasn't the passion for me that teaching was. And so that really influenced my job search. And I was thrilled to end up at a place. St. Mary's College in Maryland is a public honors college, and so it's got the liberal arts feel to it. Just 2,000 students, you get to know your
mm-hmm.
students very well. It's the sort of teaching that I really appreciate and love, but at the same time, it's still a public school, so it's fulfilling the mission of providing education to the public.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great fit for me.
Mm-hmm.
I also studied a lot of mathematics education when I was a graduate student.
Mm-hmm.
At Wisconsin, you had to do a minor, and a lot of people would do an internal minor. They were studying
mm-hmm.
topology, and they would do analysis as a minor. And so I ended up doing mathematics education as a minor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where my research interests have laid since I finished my PhD,
mm-hmm.
primarily.
You went to St. Mary's College, Maryland, and you're still there.
Mm-hmm.
So, when did your involvement with the MAA start?
I think I was a student member of the MAA probably during my undergraduate years.
Mm-hmm.
And then during graduate school, a couple of times I went to some of the local conferences.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't start getting involved nationally until, well, I first went to the joint meetings the year I was finishing my PhD,
mm-hmm.
and that was in D.C. here.
Mm-hmm.
It was a snowy, I don't know if you remember this, cold, snowy January in D.C.
Several of them have been like that.
Yeah, with 6 inches of snow.
Mm-hmm.
And, And I had a great time. Saw a couple of great talks and was busy interviewing the rest of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But then I got involved in Project Next, which was really a fantastic experience for me.
Mm-hmm.
Got to meet tons of people. I mean, I think it's best described as, you know, a career's worth of networking all in 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
And so I met lots of people, and through that I've really come to know. I have a huge network of friends now across the country,
mm-hmm.
in large part because of Project Next and the MAA.
Mm-hmm. Have you also developed an interest on the writing or communication side? Books, papers?
I love communicating mathematics to a general audience.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of fun with it. I think that it's a little bit unfortunate, I think, mathematicians, but academics in general, are not particularly good at presenting our subjects to the public in ways that are really exciting. Mathematicians don't tend to be good public speakers, and I think that I think some of us are trying to change that. We can make mathematics interesting, exciting, and get more people to see the beauty that we see in mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, certainly the teaching company course has been a great opportunity to reach a much wider audience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the exciting part about writing books or
mm-hmm.
or videos or any of these things, to reach an audience that you never could in person in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Now, through all this period, how were you maintaining your interest in music?
So I have made sure since I went to Interlochen and decided I wasn't going to pursue music, I've always made sure that I was in some sort of ensemble, specifically because if I wasn't in an ensemble, I knew I would sort of not practice, other things would take precedence, and I would sort of lose that. So I've always been in an orchestra since then. When I was an undergraduate and then a graduate student, I was in the Madison Symphony, which was a fantastic experience.
Mm-hmm.
We got to play with world-class musicians. Madison was the perfect size city for me because
mm-hmm.
it was big enough to have a decent orchestra. If it had been any bigger, the orchestra would have been too good and I wouldn't have been allowed to play with them. So it was perfect. I sat in the back of the first violin section and had just a blast for years.
Mm-hmm.
And since I moved to Maryland, I play in the local community orchestra, and I work with some of the student musicians,
mm-hmm.
play chamber music, a lot of fun.
I mean, you're still fairly early in your career. Where do you see yourself, say, about 10 years from now?
That's a good question. There are a couple of projects I really find compelling that I need to do some more thinking on and hope to make some progress. One is that I think that we need to do a better job of communicating mathematics to the general public, and I think we need to do a better job of providing professional development to young mathematicians to help them communicate mathematics more generally. I would love to work with young mathematicians to do that. You know, what is a good talk? How do you engage an audience? Things like that. The other is that I've worked with a number of people in the last few years on math for social justice, and on finding ways to teach mathematics to non-science majors in ways that help them understand the world around us better, so that they can critically read the newspaper, so that they can participate in the national dialogue about things that have a lot of mathematical content, things like Social Security and Medicare and the future. Things about, I think statistics get fudged a lot in the news, and people need to understand those better. But when it comes to something like Social Security versus Medicare, the problem with Social Security is just that there's a bulge of people. Once they're through, the program is fine. The problem with Medicare is that we have 6% per year inflation in the costs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have any knowledge of exponential functions, you know one is a
mm-hmm.
bigger problem than the other.
Mm-hmm. Although it, solving a problem is a little different than understanding it, too, though.
Right, but if you look at the long-term challenges we face, Medicare is a serious, serious
yeah.
problem, and Social Security there. I think anybody who understands the issues could name five or six things you could do
mm-hmm.
to solve the Social Security problem for good.
Mm-hmm.
Not a single person has proposed reasonable ways to solve the Medicare problem,
mm-hmm.
because exponential growth is that difficult.
Right.
And we need more people to understand these things.
Mm-hmm. Ah. Good.
Good.